Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So readings in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 2, Text 31. Svayam Samutirya Sudustaram Juman Mavarnavam Bhimam Adabra Sahridaha Bhavat Padamboruha Navam Atra Te Nidhaya Yataha Sad Anugraho Bhavan Svayam Samutirya Sudu Saram Dumam Svayam Samutirya Sudastaram Dhyuman Bhavarna Bhavarnavam Bhimamada Brasohrida Bhavarnavam Bhimamada Brasohrida Bhavat padam boruhat navamatrate Bhavat padam boruhat navamatrate Nidhaya yata saranugraho bhavan Nidhaya yata saranugraho bhavan. Gentlemen, Svayam Samutirya Sudustaram Dhyuman Bhavarnam Bhimamadabhra Sahrida Bhavat padam boruha navamatrate Paraya rada taradana bhavan Ayam smahuti yasudastrimam dhimam Bhavarnam bhimamadabhra sahrida Bhavat padam boruha navamatrate Nidhaya yata saranugraho bhavan Svayam samutirya sudustaram dhyuman Bhavarnanam bhimamadabhra sahrida Bhavat padam boruha navamatrate Nidhaya yata saranug Ladies Svayam samutirya sudastaram bhimam Bhimamadabhra sahrida Nidhaya yata saranugraho bhavan Svayam samutirya sudustaram dhyuman pavarnanam bhimamadabhisarida. Pavat param baruha navamatrate. Nidhaya yata sadanugraho bhavan. Svayam personally. Samutirya. Perfectly crossing. Sudustaram. Which is very difficult to cross. Juman, O Lord, who appear exactly like the sun, illuminating the darkness of this world of ignorance. Bhava Arnavam, the ocean of nescience. Bhimam, which is extremely fierce. Adabra Saurida, devotees who are incessantly friendly to the fallen souls. Bhavat pada amboruha, your lotus feet. Navam, the boat for crossing. Atra, in this world. Te, they, the Vaishnavas. Nidhaya, leaving behind. Yataha, on to the ultimate destination, Vaikuntha. Sat Anugraha, who are always kind and merciful to the devotees. Bhavan, you. Translation and purport by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. O Lord, who resemble the shining sun, you are always ready to fulfill the desire of your devotee, and therefore you are known as a desire tree, Vancha Kalpataru. When acharyas completely take shelter under your lotus feet in order to cross the fierce ocean of nescience, they leave behind on earth the method by which they cross. And because you are very merciful to your other devotees, you accept this method to help them. Please repeat. O Lord, who resemble the shining sun, you are always ready to fulfill the desire of your devotee. And therefore, you are known as a desire tree, Vancha Kalpataru. When acharyas completely take shelter under your lotus feet in order to cross the fierce ocean of nescience, they leave behind on earth the method by which they cross. And because you are very merciful to your devotees, you accept this method to help them. This statement reveals how the merciful acharyas and the merciful Supreme Personality of Godhead together help the serious devotee who wants to return home back to Godhead. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his teachings to Rupa Goswami, said, Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jeev, Guru Krishna Pasare Payak Bhakti Lata Bij. One can achieve the seed of Bhakti Lata, devotional service, by the mercy of Guru and Krishna. The duty of the Guru is to find the means, according to the time, the circumstances, and the candidate, by which one can be induced to render devotional service, which Krishna accepts from a candidate who wants to be successful in going back home, back to Godhead. After wandering throughout the universe, a fortunate person within this material world seeks shelter of such a guru or acharya, who trains the devotee in the suitable ways to render service according to the circumstances, so that the Supreme Personality of Godhead will accept the service. This makes it easier for the candidate to reach the ultimate destination. The Acharya's duty, therefore, is to find the means by which devotees may render service according to references from Shastra. Rupa Goswami, for example, in order to help subsequent devotees, published such devotional books as Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. This is the duty of the Acharya, to publish books that will help future candidates take up the method of service and become eligible to return home back to Godhead by the mercy of the Lord. In our Krishna consciousness movement, this same path is being prescribed and followed. Thus, the devotees have been advised to refrain from four sinful activities: illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling, and to chant 16 rounds a day. These are bona fide instructions. Because in the Western countries, constant chanting is not possible, one should not artificially imitate Haridas Thakur, but should follow this method. Krishna will accept a devotee who strictly follows the regulative principles and the method prescribed in the various books and literatures published by the authorities. The Acharya gives the suitable method for crossing the ocean of nescience by accepting the boat of the Lord's lotus feet. And if this method is strictly followed, the followers will ultimately reach the destination by the grace of the Lord. This method is called Acharya Sampradaya. It is therefore said, Sampradaya Vihina Ye Mantras Te Nishvala Mataha, Padma Purana. The Acharya Sampradaya is strictly bona fide. Therefore, one must accept the Acharya Sampradaya, otherwise one's endeavor will be futile. Srila Narottam Das Thakur therefore sings, Tandera charana sevi bhakta sanivas, janame janame hai e abhilas. One must worship the lotus feet of the Acharya and live within the society of devotees. Then one's endeavor to cross over nescience will surely be successful. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale. Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharine. Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paskachadi Shadharine. So these prayers, these demigods, they're offering these prayers to Krishna when he was in the womb of his mother Devaki in the prison of Kamsa. And such prayers are an expression of their realization of how great Krishna is. Have you ever lived or worked or gone to school with someone who you assume was just an ordinary person? Perhaps they are quiet and they stay to themselves and you don't know much about them. Then one day they come out with a book they've been working on for 10 or 20 years, or a painting or a piece of music, or they win an award for something and you're completely astonished and amazed at their greatness. So generally when that happens, out of amazement, people don't hesitate to let them know how amazed they are that they were secretly working on such a great something. So whenever one realizes the greatness of a person's quality, it is natural for them to offer them honor and praise. So someone might wonder whether the demigods' prayers were simply mundane flattery, that they were simply trying to receive Krishna's favor by offering so much flattery. So actually, what is the difference between offering a person flattery and genuine glorification? Who knows what that is? Leela. Could be, yeah, could be. Any other ideas? Yeah. What's flatteries? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's one I haven't thought of, but that's good. In the Merriam-Webster's dictionary, the definition of flattery is to praise someone in a way that is not sincere, to cause someone to feel pleased by showing respect, affection, or admiration, but it is for another purpose. It's a self-fulfilling purpose. So flattery is not founded on any substantial evidence of a person's greatness. Sometimes people overstate or they embellish a person's good qualities, which are not all that great. Or sometimes you'll find a person will dramatically praise another person who has no good qualities at all, to mock them sarcastically, which is considered to be hostile behavior. So flattery can be offered to a person in order to get something for yourself. It can also be a way of manipulating a person. So the demigods' prayers, they are not just some empty flattery. They are expressing their heartfelt appreciation of the many qualities and attributes of Krishna. They're just naming something really substantial. So the first thing they say is, Krishna, you are just like the sun. At a first glance, that might sound like or seem to be a flowery statement. But if we examine it more deeply, we will see that it's actually an accurate comparison of Krishna and the sun. So how is Krishna like the sun? Removes darkness. Okay. What else? Anybody? How is Krishna like the sun? Giving light to everything. Yeah. Can't live. So, yes, Neela? Yeah, that's very good. Yeah, good. So nothing can live without the presence of the sun. And without the sun, there's no life at all. No plants would grow here without the sun. In fact, the earth would be completely empty, frozen. It would be a desert without the sun. So similarly, our hearts feel like an empty, frozen desert without the Krishna sun to warm us and to nourish us. You've named so many other things that I haven't thought of. But Krishna is also like the sun, that we can't see even ourselves without the sun, without sunlight. We are completely blind without the sun. And similarly, the Krishna sun shines spiritual light into the world, as someone mentioned. It removes the darkness of ignorance. And we cannot even physically see without the Krishna sun. We cannot perceive or see what should be done, what should be not be done to free ourselves from our dark situation without the Krishna sun. So that Krishna sun, it is not an exaggeration. The demigods aren't just making that up to say something flowery. It's really true. Krishna is like the sun. And like the material creation, without the shining presence of Krishna, there can be no true spiritual life. So in this verse next, the demigods say, you are always ready to fulfill the desire of your devotee. So there are many types of devotees. There is the Kanishta or materialistic devotee whose devotion is mixed up with getting their own material desires fulfilled. They might have been attracted to Krishna consciousness at first because they notice that devotees don't have to work a J-O-B or a job in order to get their food and a place to live. And they may have noticed that devotees tend to also receive respect from people in general without having to work very hard for it. Still, Krishna is so merciful that despite their selfish motives, they might advance, or they do advance, just by getting Krishna's association, in spite of the fact that they have so many material desires. Some people become devotees because they're inquisitive and they're fascinated by the vast collection of knowledge given in the Vedas that reveal the many subtle truths of this material world and how to live in it more comfortably. There are so many interesting topics to pursue related to Krishna in the material world: astrology, astronomy, Ayurveda, Dhanurveda, mathematics, music, cooking, so many things. You can spend many, many lifetimes exploring the wonders of Krishna's creation without ever knowing Krishna in truth, because you're remaining focused on Krishna's external energy. And then there are those devotees who become devotees because they recognize Krishna's greatness. And they've been searching their whole life for this supreme truth. And when they encounter the philosophy, they understand immediately that I have nothing else to do but to worship this person. Such a person is considered to be very wise. A couple of weeks ago, I was having lunch with Vaisheshika and his wife and Adri Narayan, and we were talking about a prospective disciple of Vaisheshika, who somehow found a blog that I attempted doing in 2012. That's like 4 years ago. And I gave it up because it was a lot of work and it didn't bear a lot of preaching fruit. But after 4 years, I went back to that blog just to see, snoop around to see if anybody had ever visited it. And there was one guy named Edward Jackson who had emailed and said, "I want so much to be a devotee. Can you teach me how to be a devotee?" I had never seen that email for 4 years. I didn't have a clue that this person had emailed me. So after 4 years, I thought, oh, my God, I should have been looking. And I missed this opportunity. This poor person wants so badly Krishna, and I have not been able to give him any direction. So I, on a lark, I emailed him back, and I said, "Are you still there? Are you so sorry I didn't email you back. Are you still there?" And he immediately emails and said, "Oh, thank you so much for writing me back. I want so much to become a Hare Krishna devotee. I don't know how to do it. And I live in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and there's no Krishna temples anywhere nearby." So because I hadn't emailed in 4 years, he had found the closest temple, which was 3 hours away in Chicago. And he'd gone all the way to Chicago to try and become a devotee. And when he got to the temple, there was some guru who had shown up, and there was a lot of commotion, and he didn't know to bow down. And some very immature devotee chastised him because he didn't bow down at the right moment to the right person. And he was so confused by that and so hurt by that, he got in his car after 10 minutes and drove all the way to Oshkosh, Wisconsin to try and figure it out on his own. So we started for a few months. This happened in, he wanted to come to Los Angeles. I tried to get some brahmacharis to communicate with him. Nobody wanted to write him. I had time. So I thought, oh my goodness, it's my duty. We need to help people become Krishna conscious. So by throwing him back and forth different videos, how to put on a dhoti, how to wear a tilak, how to chant the guru prayers, he got a Prabhupada deity. I mean, he started in his home to worship. He was so urgent. He knew when he had heard about Krishna, "I have such a desire to worship, but I don't know how to do it." So he learned the prayers and this and that, and we went on and on. Then he wanted to find a spiritual master when he realized that in order to make my spiritual progress, I have to find a bona fide guru. And so I said, "It takes a long time. You need to come to the temple. You need to read the books. You need to find..." So somehow or other, he found Vaisheshika's website, and in it's all history from there. But just to show you that such a person who's wise, he knows when he sees Krishna and hears about Krishna, there's nothing but to worship. There's just nothing else to do. This is a wise person. So in this verse, Prabhupada is explaining. He's talking about the kind of devotee that Krishna is always ready to fulfill their desires are those type of devotees who are serious about returning back to Godhead. They have no other desire outside of that. They're single-pointed in their desire. Perhaps some of you have read the story in Mahabharata of the Pandavas when they were learning archery as teenagers. And their guru, Dronacharya, asked each of the boys to take aim with their bow and arrow at a target, the eye of a bird that was hanging somewhere in a tree. And one of the Pandavas, Bhima, he raised his bow to shoot the bird's eye, and then Drona asked him, "Now, Bhima, what do you see?" And Bhima answers, "Well, I see a tree, I see the bird, I see you, I see the sky." And Drona said something like, "Well, sit down, you have not learned the science," or something like that. And then each of the Pandavas raised their bow, and they all said they saw a whole bunch of things other than the target, including the eye of the bird. But when Arjuna raised his bow to shoot, and Drona asked him what he saw, Arjuna said, "I only see the eye of the bird. Nothing else do I see." And then Drona praised Arjuna and said, "You have mastered the art of archery." So in the same way, if a person at all wants to go back to Godhead, they have to be as focused on the goal as Arjuna. They have to have only one desire, to develop pure love for Krishna. So the demigods here are referring to such a single-pointed devotee who is considered an acharya, or a person who is teaching by example how to achieve the goal of life, which is love of God. All the acharyas in our parampara lineage are listed after the introduction of Bhagavad Gita, if you want to know who they are. But they include personalities like Prahlad Maharaj and Narada Muni and Madhavendra Puri, Lord Chaitanya, Narottam Das Thakur, Rupa Goswami, and our dear beloved Srila Prabhupada. So we don't waste time second-guessing such persons, because their lives demonstrate they've achieved the goal that we seek to attain. Suppose you meet a person who is an expert violinist, and he plays in the Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra, and you aspire to learn how to play the violin. You would sound awfully foolish were you to say to or about that person, "Well, I don't think he knows how to play the violin the right way. I know better than him." You wouldn't say that. That would be really stupid to say to someone, that expert, that you know better. So when you meet someone who can do what you aspire to do and what you want to learn, if you want to learn that skill, it is not in your best interest to challenge their authority or on that subject. They're an expert. They're a specialist. Not even a mundane teacher will waste time trying to teach a student who doesn't have faith in what they're teaching. Even in my case, I'm a very puny, mundane teacher of chaplains. I don't hesitate to tell any one of my students who demonstrates by their words or by their behavior that they think they know better than me how to be a chaplain. That's what I do. I've been training for 15 years to do this. The person who comes in the door doesn't know anything. So I will tell a person who demonstrates by their attitude, their words, "Well, if you think you know better, then I can't help you. Please go find another teacher to learn from. Not going to waste my time." So similarly, Prabhupada said many times that if the disciple doesn't follow the instructions of the guru, then they are wasting both the guru's time and their own precious time. Time is very precious. So any serious devotee of Krishna in the Gaudiya Vaishnava lineage has to understand that Srila Prabhupada and all of the acharyas in our sampradaya are experts on the topic of God realization. And they are experts because they have already attained it. So the simplest and most intelligent thing to do if you want to achieve the same goal is to simply accept all their teachings and trust that whatever you do not yet understand, that will be revealed in time. Don't argue about it. Don't get in your head about it. Just accept, they know better than me. I apparently don't understand it right now. Let me just follow, and Krishna will reveal it in due course of time. So in this purport, Prabhupada candidly reveals a bit of his own thinking process in why he established the International Society for Krishna Consciousness when he says, "The duty of the guru is to find the means according to the time, circumstances, and candidate by which one can be induced to render devotional service and be successful in going back home, back to Godhead." So when Srila Prabhupada came to the United States, he came prepared to try and plant the teachings as he learned them from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Swami. But after being here for a while and seeing how incredibly fallen we are, he realized that we were not capable of meeting all those expectations. Most of us already know the story that Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master asked his disciple to chant 64 rounds of the Maha Mantra every day. And when he instructed us to do this also, we were so fallen and lazy and unfocused, we could not do it. The devotees complained so much that Srila Prabhupada said, "All right, then just chant 32. And we were still unable to do that. So finally, Prabhupada said, "Okay then, chant a minimum of 16 rounds every day, but no less. And I remember, as a young devotee, that we were also required to chant 25 rounds on Ekadashi, which I don't know if many people do that anymore. So we may think that we're doing a great job in getting our 16 rounds done. But in comparison to the standard of 64 rounds, our efforts are pretty meager. That said, Bhaktisiddhanta, he was also very merciful. And he considered that all aspects of preaching work to be non-different from chanting. So when his own disciples were too busy preaching to complete their 64 rounds, he considered that they had chanted them due to their total engagement in service to the Sankirtan mission. So the Acharya devotee is so merciful that he makes some adjustments in order to facilitate even the most unqualified persons to purify their heart and begin their journey toward going back home, back to Godhead. Finally, Prabhupada makes the point that only the Acharya Sampradaya is strictly bona fide. Therefore, unless one accepts this bhakti path exactly how it has been handed down in the bona fide chain of Acharyas, all of one's endeavors will be a complete waste of time. Even in the time of Lord Chaitanya, there were many splits and diversions to the Parampara teachings. And all those false lineages have dried up and died by now. Still, in our current day, there are so many opinions floating around us that unless you carefully study Srila Prabhupada's books, you are sure to be misguided by so many other opinions. Don't think that because you've read the Bhagavad Gita one time that you have fully understand Srila Prabhupada's points. There are so many hidden messages in the purports of Prabhupada's books that unless you read deeply and regularly, you will totally miss them. At the end of the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, therefore, Narottam Das Thakur, a recent Acharya in our disciplic lineage, sings, Tandera Charana Sevi Bhakta Sanivas Janame Janame Hai E Abhilas. One must worship the lotus feet of the Acharya and live within the society of devotees. Then one's endeavor to cross over nescience will surely be successful. So sometimes we might think that it would be so much easier to simply live alone and worship the lotus feet of the Acharya without having the headache of navigating relationships with so many people. Each devotee is so different from one another that if you were not a member of ISKCON, you may not seek them out to engage in an interpersonal relationship. You might want them as your neighbors even. But because Prabhupada is the center, there's a reason why we're all together. A couple of reasons, actually, why practicing spiritual life in the association of devotees is important. Devotees who are at all different stages and levels of their spiritual realization. First of all, in order to be rightly situated in the Guru Parampara system, you have to be engaged somehow in assisting Krishna in his mission to save the fallen souls. Actually, we are a salvation army. Not the kind that stands on the street corners at Christmas time ringing a bell and asking for a donation. That's not what we are. We are fighting a battle against the demonic forces that are oppressing human society since Krishna left this planet. And we cannot be successful if we do it alone. So in order to be effective, it is more efficient for us to join forces and work together. Well, you might say, I can just go out and stand on the street corner and shout the message of Krishna like the born-again Christians do. But how many people will you reach like that? Who will take you seriously? Well, maybe a few people. And then what? Okay, so you have some people who take your message seriously and they come to you and they say, well, I like your message, so what do I do next? And you must have a base camp where you can train people to be a useful part of the mission. And therefore, it makes sense to have a temple, a school where people can learn the philosophy, how to practice it. And hopefully, eventually, these people will become effective preachers themselves. So there's an even more important reason why we practice Krishna consciousness in community. because every one of us has blind spots that we would never be able to bring to light if we practice in isolation. Each of us can see the strengths and weaknesses of other people, but we cannot see our own, although we are doing a good job hiding them from ourselves. So Krishna uses the Vaishnava Sangha to teach us, to help us be humble and realize our interdependence and interconnection with everyone. We actually need others to reflect back to us who we are in order to see ourselves. Other devotees are mirrors through which we can see ourselves. Without that feedback, we miss important information from Krishna, who is trying to get through to us through the mouths of the devotees. Lord Chaitanya used to cup his ears so he could better hear it when people offered him criticism, and he used to put his hands over his ears when they praised him. And he was setting an example for us to follow in our devotional service. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta viewed his own disciples as the representative of his spiritual master. There's this famous story of a disciple of his who was always finding fault with him. Lord Chaitanya also had a disciple who was always finding fault, Ramachandra Puri. But Bhaktisiddhanta's disciple, when he died, he overheard his disciples clapping and, yay, oh, this is great. He finally died. Now he doesn't have to bother us anymore. And Bhaktisiddhanta heard them speaking like this, and he said, no. He was sent by my spiritual master to teach me to be humble. So he didn't agree that this person was some external force trying to harm him. He saw, oh, Krishna's directly trying to help me. One time there was a guest who came into Prabhupada's room and began yelling at Prabhupada. And when he left, his disciples began criticizing him, thinking, well, how dare he stomp in and say all those things to our Srila Prabhupada? Of course, that was appropriate for the disciples to take, of be defensive for on behalf of their spiritual master. But Prabhupada said, I am receiving my karma from something I did to him in my past. You cannot blame the deliverer of your karma. So Prabhupada even didn't see this person as a bad person. So these are all Parampara Acharyas from our lineage who are teaching us how to see Krishna in everything at all times. Krishna says, not a blade of grass moves without the sanction of the Supreme. The Acharyas are showing us what it means to have Krishna vision. It's not that we are here in the Hare Krishna movement to be workaholics, activists who get an adrenaline rush by doing a whole lot of work. There is meant to be a reflective process going on inside us all the time that ponders how our service is personally meaningful and enlightening. Devotional service is a meditation on Krishna. Service is prayer made visible. Krishna doesn't say in the Bhagavad Gita, just stand and fight. He says, armed with yoga, stand and fight. So our connection to Krishna is absolutely essential for us to have the spiritual potency to aspire others to take to Krishna consciousness. People do not change their lives by only getting a better idea. They are inspired to change their lives when their hearts are touched deeply. So our service has to be done with our hearts and not with our heads. The most inspiring thing for people today is to see a community of people who share authentic, unconditionally loving relationships with one another on the basis of their love of God. It is a universal, basic human need to feel like you are loved and that you belong. I know this from the chaplaincy work that I do. There is nothing that has the power to transform human hearts more than to be in the association of others who are sincerely trying to love God unconditionally. Whatever name you have got for God, whether you call God Allah, Jehovah, Buddha, Krishna, or Christ, people are yearning for a spiritual home where they can be nurtured and grow. In the early 1970s, my father met with Srila Prabhupada at the Potomac ISKCON Temple in Maryland. Their conversation is in the conversation book, and I think it's number 23. And in that conversation, the transcriber has written my name as Barbara, since my father pronounced my name Rabara. And so he couldn't pronounce it correctly. So whoever transcribed it wrote as Barbara. So my father's name is Mr. Boyd, so that's a conversation. But in this conversation, Prabhupada asked my father what he does for a living. And my father says, business. So Prabhupada explains that his ISKCON movement is like a business. And then my father said his daughter had dropped out of college to join his movement. And Prabhupada explained that his ISKCON was actually a college. So in this way, Prabhupada made the point of trying to join my father where he was in his understanding. And it's important to remember that the temple is a whole lot of things. It's a training center. It's a school. It's a business. It's a community. It's a spiritual hospital. It's so many things. But if we are not united around the vision and mission of the founder of this movement, we will not have the power to impact the godless culture around us. Yesterday I heard on a tape Prabhupada calling the whole ISKCON movement an astra. That's a weapon. He was referring to the whole movement as a unified army of devotees who have banded together to act as one body. A transcendental weapon that can destroy the demonic mentality within ourselves and the world outside us. Joined together in service, we are a powerful astra or weapon in the hands of Krishna. So in that sense, each of us has an important function as a member of this whole astra. We might be a little screw or a wheel in that astra, but each part is absolutely needed if we are going to run smoothly as a machine, as a healing machine. So we require each other to discern, in order to discern how Krishna is guiding us individually in our day-to-day lives within the association of devotees. Krishna is speaking to us through the mouths of each other and through what happens to us. And in order to hear Krishna speaking through all that is coming our way, we have to be submissive listeners. Not just submissive listeners when we chant our rounds or listening to a lecture tape, but also in everything that is going on inside us and all around us. What is Krishna trying to teach me right now? Am I interested even to know that? Do I care enough to pause and listen to how Krishna is speaking to me? And the goal of bhakti yoga is to not only know Krishna, but to realize ourselves as servants of Krishna. So as I've already mentioned, that I'm an educator and trainer of professional chaplains. And the founder of the method of learning that we use is very similar to the bhakti process in that it requires students to not only study the theory of spiritual care, it requires them to practically engage in providing spiritual care to others 4 times as many hours as they study in the classroom. Just an interesting note on that, Ravinder Swarup, Prabhu, my godbrother, he did his dissertation on the founder of this clinical pastoral education movement process. At VIHE in Vrindavan, he used the founder and this method of learning in a workshop he did for 4 days. So in the same way, what we do here in the Hare Krishna movement is practical theology. We practice living the teachings that we believe in. We don't just talk about them. Even Christian theologians understand this point, which is why they created this kind of chaplaincy program, that it wasn't enough just to talk about unconditional love. As a preacher, you have to teach by example what unconditional love looks like and feels like. And if a person doesn't practice what they preach, they will lack realization and integrity in their lives, and their preaching will have no power to move human hearts. It will simply come across as being self-righteous. There's nothing more convincing to those who are seeking an authentic spiritual experience than to see a living example of unconditional loving service to God lived out within a caring community of people. So there is enormous potential in what we have here on Watsika Avenue. Just doing what we do to serve Krishna on a daily basis. Prabhupada said, if you build a better mousetrap, the whole world will beat a path to your door. And I see this happening here at New Dwarka. More and more people are coming all the time. They come for the wonderful restaurant, Prasadam. They come to see the gorgeous deities in temple room. They come to see the Govinda's gift shop. They come for the awesome kirtans and festivals. So if we can continue to deepen our love for Krishna and meanwhile maintain all these programs, I am certain Srila Prabhupada will bestow his mercy on all of us more and more. So I'm going to stop here. Thank you very much. I don't know if there's time for a question, but thank you. Hare Krishna. I think there's no time for questions. Time for breakfast.